let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The highly praised children's book, Snookapie Gets Adopted, is a fun, interactive book that explores the concept of open adoption via a Welsh corgi puppy named Snookapie, intended to help children and adults alike better understand and emotionally comprehend the adoption process. The author is Nancy Yore Douglas, a licensed social worker from Pittsburgh. She has worked with children for over 40 years. Her main areas of interest are children who have been placed for adoption, child abuse and neglect. She specialized in open adoption, and she loves Welsh corgis. Nancy Yore Douglas, licensed social worker and author of Snookapie Gets Adopted, is our guest on This Week in America. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so very much, Rick. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to talk about adoption. Thank you.
Well, and it's so important, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And let's first of all talk about the inspiration to write the book. How did this whole book come about?
I worked with severely abused and neglected children for many years. And one of the main things that I was focused upon was sometimes by the time I got to the children at age 13 or 14, they had been so traumatized. They ended up in the foster care system, and I felt that maybe, just maybe, as a social worker, I would be able to do a better job if I started with infants. And so that was my goal, and I was able to become a birth parent counselor at a premier adoption agency in Pittsburgh. I did a lot of grief and loss work, and that's what I was able to help the birth mothers and the birth fathers. I would help them through the grieving process. But I felt that there was just not enough literature written for the younger children
Yes.
who had been adopted. So I decided that I would write a book that addressed the needs of those children and open up an avenue where children could ask questions about being adopted. And I wanted to do it in a child-friendly way, which is why I chose the Welsh Corgi puppy as a vehicle to explain the feelings and emotions surrounding the adoption process.
And you do that so well, and the story really resonates with adults as well, because it gives us sort of a different perspective of what we're talking about. The book is Snookapie Gets Adopted. Nancy Yore Douglas, licensed social worker, is the author and our guest on the program. Interesting talking about your work with birth parents. Interested to find out how birth parents truly feel when they're placing their child up for adoption. What emotions, feelings are they going through?
Well, the place I worked so extensively with the birth mothers and the birth fathers, who are frequently neglected in this arena, the feeling that I saw from the birth mothers, and I would get called to go to the hospital to pick the babies, meet with the birth mother firstly, and then pick the babies up when they were 48 hours old and take them to a temporary foster home until the birth parents chose an adoptive family. The emotions I encountered with the birth mothers, particularly, was that of, it was equal to, well, it was a double-sided situation. I saw a birth mother so grief-stricken that she just slid down the wall, sobbing, so much sobbing. It was, they knew on some level, some surface, others not quite sure, knew that they could not properly take care of an infant the way the infant deserved to be taken care of. And they felt that the adoption was the best way to have the child taken care of. But the process of giving your infant to another party, which was me, I had to. Well, how we did it was we would ask the birth mother to hold the baby because the theory at the time was they couldn't say goodbye to the infant until they said hello.
Okay.
So I would be with the birth mothers and birth fathers if they were there, and they would hand the baby to me. I felt a tremendous sense of responsibility, and I let them grieve. It was heart-wrenching for all parties involved, and a lot of soul-searching on the birth mother's part. And in the state of Pennsylvania, you have to have the birth father's consent as well. I spent a lot of time at our jail. Many of the birth fathers were unable to provide care. And the birth mothers were just so grief-stricken. Furthermore, there's a high rate of suicide among birth mothers. So I provided therapy to them throughout this entire process, making sure that that was not an option that they were considering. It's a universal wound, a primal wound for the birth mother and the birth father.
You talk
so
about...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm thinking what you went through, and you talk about the responsibility for the birth mother, no matter what the purpose is. It gets very emotional at that time. That transfer may be the most vivid memory of this whole process, isn't it? How you approach it is crucial to everybody's emotional stability during this process.
I would agree with you. And I had a great deal of experience with grief and loss in my own life. Losing a baby, bearing a baby, losing my husband shortly thereafter. And the birth mothers would say to me, "You seem to know how I'm feeling." And I said, "I do." And I felt that God placed me in the position to help these birth mothers and birth fathers. God gave me the strength and the skill, hopefully, to help to address these women during absolutely the most sorrowful point in their life.
And specifically so, those few moments as you're doing the transfer there. Nancy Ewer Douglas, licensed social worker, is our guest on the program. Written a book, Snookapie Gets Adopted, dealing with the topic of open adoption that we're discussing on the program today. Mention the birth mother. What is the role of the birth father? How important is that to in the adoption process? And obviously you reached out, even if the father wasn't there, to help them through this process. They grieve as well, I'm sure.
Oh, they grieve just as much as the birth mother, but they hide it much better.
Yes.
Because culturally, of course,
yes,
men are not supposed to be, you know, weak or crying. But I always felt on several levels that I, besides the law stating that the birth father had to be involved, he had an equal say in the adoption, and I had to search him out, whether it be in the jail. It did not matter to me where I had to find him. We had to find him. one of the reasons we had to find him, besides just offering him as much help as I could to deal with the loss. The loss is equal to the birth father. Equal. It's just not manifested. One of the things at our adoption agency that we did was we went back to the great-grandparents for medical history, and I needed to know from the birth father, just say, for example, in the future, this adopted child needs stem cells, a transplant. I need to know back to the great-grandfather, what was your family, what health issues were in your family. And I felt that many times birth fathers in other states, in Ohio, for example, they didn't really care. They cared, but it wasn't an essential part of the adoption process to have the birth father sign off on the paperwork to place the infant. In Pennsylvania, it was essential that the birth father sign off, and we had to go to extensive means to find him. When I did find them, I had one fellow who was in the jail, and they allowed me to have a contact visit, which means I didn't have to use the glass partition.
Yes.
And initially I got there, and he sat back in his chair, and he was just calling me every name in the book and swearing at me, and who do you think you are? And I said to him, I'm here to help you. This is about your son, and I want to help you with this process as much as possible. Well, this very convicted felon started to sob, and he sobbed and sobbed and sobbed and said, you're the only person that has come here to help me and include me in this process. From that point on, and everyone told me, you'll never get him to sign the papers. He did sign the papers to place the child for adoption, and he would call me regularly from the jail, and I would give him an update on how his baby was doing. So I went places that some other people might not go, but I felt it was essential for the baby in the future to know about the birth father and the birth father's family.
Yes.
Whatever it may be, even if it was a difficult situation.
Boy,
the
time is going so quickly, and it's such a fascinating, important, and rewarding job that you do. I don't even want to call it a job. It's much more than that. I want to talk about some of the information, the crucial information that you as a social worker gather from the birth mother, the birth father, during the whole placement process. What is that like? What information are you looking for during that period?
Well, the first thing that we look for is, for me, I went in singularly focused on what is in the best interest of this infant. That was my job. And actually, I always told people this was a calling, not a job.
I was saying job. Calling is a much better word. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for and couldn't get.
Yes, and I always felt this way from the time I began. And what I looked for from the birth mother was, first and foremost, you know, I was concerned about her health and the baby's, the infant's health. If the mother was a drug user, which did happen, you know, I wanted to see the toxicology screen because we needed to know if the baby was in the neonatal intensive care unit. We needed to know if they needed morphine. They give the babies morphine if the mother is addicted to opioids, which we know is a national crisis, to detox the baby slowly from the mother's drug use. And I would go to some of the mothers couldn't face the fact, so I would go to the neonatal intensive care unit and hold these babies. I got to know the nurses. I was very interested in the birth mother and birth father's commitment to this adoption process. And I approached it in this manner. The adoptive family had waited 5, maybe 8 years and could not
conceive a child on their own for whatever reason. I made my birth mothers convince me that they were not going to, because they have a year's period of time in Pennsylvania, that they were not going to call me up and say, I want my baby back. And in all the cases that I was involved with, I never did have that happen once. So when a birth mother, we would have very intense conversations about their commitment to have the child placed with another family. And they were able to choose the family. So that gave them some power in the process.
Yes.
And, you know, so that not calling me and saying, I want the baby back, because then I have to deal with basically a death in the adoptive family. They're grieving now the loss of a child. And I never had that happen because my birth mothers and fathers had to convince me that this was the only plan that they wanted for their newborn.
In this process, what is the biggest fear of the adoptive family? Is it they'll get that call saying they've changed their mind?
Oh, yes. There are several huge fears of the adoptive family. One is the call will come in after they've, you know, had the nursery all complete, that birth mother calls and says, I've changed my mind. I want the baby back. I never had that happen. I know it does happen. In some states it does happen. It did not happen to me in the state of Pennsylvania. The other fear that the adoptive family has is that somehow when the child starts to talk, that they're going to ask a lot of questions about being adopted. And the best thing ever with an adopted child is to talk about them being adopted from the time you get them home. Because, say, a lot of families say, well, I'll wait till the child's 13 or 14.
Right.
They think, well, they can handle it. At that point, if you do that, all bets are off. The child who is adopted now thinks that they have been lied to for all these years, and it can cause extreme disruption in the adoptive family. So in the fact of the matter, in an open adoption situation where the birth parents and the adoptive parents meet and share the infant, the biggest concern there for the adoptive parents is that the birth mother is somehow going to come when she's when the infant is, say, 5 and take the infant away. The truth of the matter is, and this was a surprise to me, the older the child gets, in many cases, that's when the birth parents really fade out of the picture due to possible guilt. They don't know what to say to the child. So that's the biggest fear, that the birth parents will call and ask for the baby to be returned to them, or that the birth parents down the line will come and disrupt the entire adoption in the adoptive family. And I never saw that happen. Never. It's how it's handled in the beginning that makes the transition later successful.
If it's done well in the beginning, it makes everything smoother on down the line, as we're finding in our discussion with Nancy Ure Douglas, licensed social worker, talking about her book, Snookapie Gets Adopted. That's a highly praised children's book, fun, interactive book, explores the concept of open adoption. Just a couple minutes left in the program, but I want two things here at the end that I think are important. I've mentioned the term open adoption several times. What is open adoption?
Open adoption, and I have a family in particular that I'm still very much in contact with. The child's now 16 years old. The adoptive parents basically always kept the birth parent in the loop with this child's development. They met year after year after year. They are all included in, well, his name is Johnny, and the book is dedicated to him. And open adoption is when the birth parents and the adoptive parents basically, on some level, share the child. The adoptive child knows that his adoptive parents are his parents, but he also is very familiar with his birth mother and hopefully his birth father. And I have seen situations where it results in the adoptive child not having any questions about what happened because everyone is present. And this particular child, Johnny, is so well, he's just so well adjusted. He's an athlete. He's intelligent. He's everything you could ever want in a child. And one of the reasons that is because his birth parents and adoptive parents have all participated in his growth and development.
I'm going to take a minute here at the end because I think it's so important. We've talked about this from the different angles, from the angle of a child that's been placed in open adoption. What are some of their universal concerns that we should be aware of?
First and foremost, an adoptive child always has a primal need to know about his birth parents. Always. And if that need is neglected, problems will run. That may be as simple as if, say, the birth mother does not want to have contact, which result that was more common than I had ever expected. At least get some pictures of the birth mother. They have, I was running a therapy group with another social worker about the children who had been adopted. They all asked the same sorts of questions. What color was my birth mother? What color was her hair, my birth mother? How tall was she? Will I be like her? What did she do? Was I a bad baby? That's a common misconception. No,
yes.
You were not a bad baby. And so in Pennsylvania, they can't search for the birth parents if the adoption is somewhat closed until age 18. But universally, they want to know about their birth parents. And it's so much better to deal with the truth in all of these situations than to try to disguise, hide. That just does not work out. Because in the end, what we are looking at is the very best interest of this child. And that was my focus from the beginning of the process to the ongoing process now.
So much great information during the course of the program. We've only basically touched the surface. With us on the program is Nancy Ure Douglas, licensed social worker. She's the author of the book, Snookapie Gets Adopted, a children's book intended to help children and adults alike better understand and emotionally comprehend the adoption process. Nancy, the time has gone by way too quickly. So much excellent information during the program today. Thank you so much for sharing, reliving some of these moments that you've gone through and giving us an inside look at open adoption. Thank you for being with us and sharing on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you here and a much-needed topic discussed. Nancy Ure Douglas is our guest and the author. You can get information on her book at Amazon, Snookapie Gets Adopted. And, of course, information on Nancy and her book at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program after we pause for these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.